Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Deadly Affairs, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, A Web of Deceit. My name is Vivian. People think they know who I am when they first meet me, sweet, soft-spoken, the kind of woman who fits perfectly into whatever narrative they want to believe. But the truth? I'm none of those things. What I am is a survivor. A manipulator. A woman who's learned to take what she wants because waiting for it never works. Let me tell you a little secret. Every person you meet has a weakness. Some are vain. Others are greedy. Most are just desperate for someone to make them feel special, even if only for a moment. That's the key. To find their weakness, feed it, and make them believe it's all for their benefit. Once they trust you, you can make them do anything. And I do mean anything. Take Thomas, for example. The first time I met him, I knew he'd be easy prey. I was at a charity gala, pretending to be one of those affluent women who brunch on weekdays and shop for designer handbags as a hobby. The dress I wore wasn't even mine. I borrowed it from a friend of a friend, someone too drunk to notice it missing from her closet. I had a glass of champagne in one hand, a practiced smile on my lips, and eyes that knew exactly where to look. Thomas spotted me across the room, lingering by the hors d'oeuvres like a lion sizing up his prey. He had that slick lawyer look, tailored suit, watch that probably cost more than most people's cars, and the kind of confidence that comes from winning every argument. I could see his wedding ring from where I stood, but I didn't care. Men like Thomas wore their marriages like armor, thinking it made them untouchable. It only made them predictable. I let him approach me, playing coy as he complimented my dress, my smile, my laugh. His wife was there, of course, an elegant blonde with perfect posture who probably hadn't looked at him like I did in years. That was all it took, really. A look. The kind of look that makes a man feel seen, wanted. By the end of the night, he'd slipped me his number, along with a promise. I don't usually do this, but there's something about you. Jason was different. I found him in a dive bar on the outskirts of town, a place where no one asked questions and everyone had something to hide. He was sitting alone at the counter, nursing a whiskey and scowling like the world had personally wronged him. His hands were rough, calloused, the hands of a man who worked with them for a living. Construction, maybe, or something equally physical. He had a broad frame, a shaved head, and a temper that radiated off him like heat from asphalt on a summer day. I sat next to him, ordered a drink, and made sure to fumble just enough with my purse for him to notice. "Rough night?" he asked, his voice gruff but curious. I told him a story, one I'd rehearsed 100 times before, about a broken relationship, a dead-end job, and a life that felt like it was closing in on me. It was all lies, of course, but Jason didn't need to know that. He just needed to believe I needed him. Men like Jason were easy to hook. They craved power, control, the chance to be someone's savior. All I had to do was play the role of the damsel in distress, and he was mine. He started coming to my apartment after work, bringing gifts he couldn't afford and stories about how he hated his boss, his wife, his life. "You deserve better," I'd whisper, tracing circles on his arm. And when the time came to ask for a favor, to sell a few stolen tools, to borrow a little cash, he didn't even hesitate. Then there was Eric. Sweet, gullible Eric. He was the kind of man who believed in fairy tales, in love at first sight and happily ever afters. I found him on a dating app, his profile picture a blurry selfie that screamed, "Harmless." He worked in tech, some startup that paid him well enough to keep him in designer sneakers and overpriced coffee. Eric was a dreamer, a romantic, the kind of man who thought flowers and handwritten notes could solve any problem. With Eric, I played the part of the intellectual soulmate, the woman who loved indie films, obscure novels, and philosophical debates over wine. He fell for me so fast it was almost pathetic. "I've never met anyone like you," he told me after our second date, his eyes shining with something that looked like hope. I smiled, kissed him softly, and thought about all the ways I could use him. Each man served a purpose. Thomas had money and connections, Jason had muscle, and Eric had access to technology one didn't fully understand but knew I could exploit. Together, they were my personal trifecta, a perfect storm of resources and weaknesses. But they didn't know about each other. They couldn't. Keeping them separate was a full-time job, juggling schedules, inventing excuses, crafting stories so airtight even I started to believe them. It wasn't just about the money, though there was plenty of that. It was about control. Power. The thrill of knowing I could make them do things they'd never dreamed of, empty bank accounts, steal from job sites, hack into business systems. All because they thought they were doing it for me. For us. But the cracks were starting to show. Thomas had been growing suspicious, asking questions I didn't have answers to. Jason's temper was getting harder to manage, especially when I pushed him too far. And Eric. Well, Eric was too trusting for his own good. He'd started to notice the inconsistencies, the little slips in my stories. I could feel the walls closing in, but I told myself I'd get through it. I always did. That night, as I sat in my apartment, scrolling through my phone, a text from Jason lit up the screen. "We need to talk." My chest tightened. Jason wasn't the kind of man who said things lightly. When he wanted to talk, it usually meant someone was about to get hurt. I typed out a quick reply, my fingers trembling slightly. "What's wrong?" The dots appeared, then disappeared, then reappeared again. Finally, his response came through. "Just be ready to explain yourself." "Explain myself?" The pit in my stomach grew heavier, but I forced myself to stay calm. Jason didn't know the truth. He couldn't. None of them could. I glanced at my reflection in the window, my hair perfectly styled, my lipstick still fresh from the last time I touched it up. I looked like a woman in control, but inside, I felt the first flicker of fear. For the first time, I wondered if I'd gone too far. But it didn't matter. I couldn't stop now, not when I was so close to having everything I wanted. They say you can't con a con artist, but I've always believed there's an exception to every rule. And I was about to find out if I was wrong. Chapter 2, Secrets and Seduction. Jason's text lingered in my mind long after I'd hit the reply button. "Just be ready to explain yourself." The words clung to me, gnawing at the edges of my carefully constructed facade. I'd spent years mastering the art of control, of staying one step ahead. And yet, for the first time, I felt something slipping. A thread coming loose in the web I'd so meticulously spun. I knew better than to ignore it. Jason wasn't like Thomas or Eric. He didn't ask questions out of suspicion. He demanded answers because he needed to feel in control. And when Jason didn't feel in control, people got hurt. I had seen his temper firsthand, the way his hands clenched into fists when he spoke of his boss, his wife, the men who looked at me a second too long. He was a coiled spring, waiting for the slightest excuse to snap. But that was also what made him so useful. Jason's anger was a weapon, one I'd learned to wield to my advantage. The challenge now was keeping that weapon pointed anywhere, but at me. I texted him back. "Of course. Come over tonight." My hands were steady, my breathing calm, but my mind raced. Jason wasn't a man you could pacify with sweet words alone. He needed reassurance, proof that he was still the center of my world. Lucky for me, I had a talent for making men believe exactly what they wanted to hear. By the time Jason arrived, I'd transformed my apartment into a scene straight out of his fantasies. Candles flickered on every surface, their soft glow casting shadows that danced across the walls. The faint scent of vanilla lingered in the air, mingling with the smell of freshly baked cookies. A trick I'd learned long ago to create an atmosphere of comfort. I wore a dress he liked, one that hugged my curves in all the right places, and I greeted him with a smile that promised him the world. But Jason wasn't here for cookies or candlelight. He walked in without a word, his jaw tight, and his eyes scanning the room as if searching for evidence of my betrayal. His hands were shoved into the pockets of his leather jacket, but I could see the tension in his shoulders, the way his muscles coiled like a predator ready to strike. "What's wrong?" I asked, my voice soft and soothing, the way I knew he liked it. I reached out to touch his arm, but he pulled away, his gaze narrowing as it settled on me. "You tell me," he said, his voice low and dangerous. "What's going on, Viv? And don't lie to me." "Lie?" The accusation stung, even though I'd been lying to him since the day we met. But I couldn't let him see that. Instead, I let my eyes widen, feigning hurt and confusion. "Jason, I don't know what you're talking about," I said, my voice trembling just enough to sell the act. "You're scaring me. Please, just talk to me." He didn't buy it. Not entirely. Jason wasn't smart in the traditional sense, but he had instincts, sharp, animalistic instincts that told him when something wasn't right. And right now, those instincts were screaming at him. "I talked to some guys at work," he said, his voice clipped. They said you've been asking questions about things you shouldn't be asking about. Tools. Materials. Stuff that's gone missing. I froze just for a fraction of a second, but it was enough. Jason saw it, and his eyes darkened. I trusted you, he said, stepping closer, his voice rising. I stuck my neck out for you, and now I find out you've been. What? Using me? Stealing from me? Jason, no, I said, my voice breaking. I let the tears come, hot and fast, my chest heaving with sobs that weren't entirely fake. I would never do that to you. You mean everything to me. He hesitated, his anger warring with his need to believe me. Jason didn't want to see the truth, not really. He wanted to be the hero, the man who saved me from whatever mess I'd gotten myself into. I just had to give him a reason to hold on to that illusion. I only asked about the tools because I was worried about you, I said, my voice trembling. You said your boss was giving you a hard time, and I thought, maybe if you had something to sell on the side, it could help. I didn't mean to make things worse. Jason's anger softened just a little. He reached up to rub the back of his neck, his eyes darting away from mine as he processed my words. I could see the wheels turning in his head, his need to believe me battling with the doubts that still lingered. Viv, you should have told me, he said, his voice low. You can't just go around asking questions like that. People talk. I know, I said, stepping closer and placing a hand on his chest. His heart was pounding, hard and fast beneath my palm. I'm sorry, Jason. I just wanted to help. I didn't mean to upset you. He sighed, his shoulders relaxing slightly. I could see the fight draining out of him, replaced by the need to protect me, to forgive me. Jason wasn't the type to hold a grudge. Not against me, anyway. He needed me too much for that. All right, he said finally. But no more secrets, okay? I mean it, Viv. If I find out you've been lying to me. He didn't finish the sentence, but he didn't need to. The threat hung in the air between us, heavy and unspoken. I nodded, my eyes wide and earnest. No more secrets, I said, my voice barely above a whisper. I promise. By the time Jason left, the tension had faded, replaced by the familiar rhythm of our dynamic. He kissed me hard, his hands gripping my waist as if he could keep me tethered to him by sheer force of will. But as soon as the door closed behind him, my smile dropped. Jason wasn't going to be a problem, at least not tonight. But his suspicions had planted a seed of doubt, one that could grow into something dangerous if I wasn't careful. I needed to tighten my grip, to remind him why he trusted me in the first place. And then there was Thomas. I hadn't seen him in days, but he'd been calling, leaving voicemails that grew increasingly insistent. He wanted answers, too, answers I wasn't ready to give. Eric was the easiest to manage. Sweet, naive Eric, who still thought I was the love of his life. But even he had started to ask questions, to notice the cracks in the stories I told him. I couldn't afford to lose him, not yet. Not when I still needed him. As I sat in the dim light of my apartment, sipping wine and staring at the flickering candles, I felt the weight of it all pressing down on me. The lies, the manipulation, the constant juggling, it was exhilarating, yes, but it was also exhausting. And I knew deep down that I was running out of time. But I wasn't worried. Not yet. After all, I'd come this far by staying one step ahead, by making sure the people I used never saw the knife until it was already in their backs. And if I had to twist the blade a little deeper to keep my secrets safe, so be it. Chapter 3, The Perfect Con. By the time the sun rose the next morning, my mind was already working overtime. Jason's accusations still echoed in my head, a reminder that the foundation I'd built was starting to crack. If he could sense my lies, what about the others? Could I keep the web intact, or was I standing too close to the flames? I couldn't afford doubt. Doubt was a luxury for people who played by the rules. And rules? Rules were for people who lost. My game had no rules, only winners and losers, and I intended to stay in the former category. But to do that, I had to move faster, manipulate better, and make sure the people I used stayed oblivious long enough for me to finish what I'd started. Thomas was next on my list. Sweet, arrogant Thomas, who still thought I looked at him with love instead of calculation. He'd been pestering me for days, leaving voicemail after voicemail, his tone growing more urgent with each message. He suspected something, I could tell. But unlike Jason, Thomas wasn't fueled by anger. He was fueled by ego. And if there was one thing I knew how to manipulate, it was a man's ego. When I called him, he answered on the first ring. Vivian, he said, his voice sharp. I was starting to think you were avoiding me. Thomas, I replied, letting just enough breathiness seep into my tone to sound apologetic. I'm so sorry, I've been overwhelmed with work and, you know, everything. Everything, he repeated, a note of suspicion creeping into his voice. What exactly does that mean? I hesitated, just long enough to make him feel in control. Then I sighed, letting my voice drop into a softer, more vulnerable register. Thomas, I didn't want to tell you this, but I've been dealing with some financial issues. It's embarrassing, really. I didn't know how to ask for help. The line went quiet for a moment, and I could almost hear his thoughts racing. Men like Thomas loved being needed. It made them feel powerful, important. I could already see him sitting up straighter, his chest puffing out as he prepared to come to my rescue. Vivian, he said finally, his voice softening. You know you can come to me for anything. What's going on? I bit my lip, even though he couldn't see me, and let out another sigh. It's my rent. I'm behind, and my landlord's been threatening to evict me. I've been trying to figure it out, but I didn't want you to think I was just using you. It was a bold move, admitting the very thing he was probably already thinking. But sometimes the best lies are the ones that sound the most like the truth. Thomas prided himself on being perceptive, and by addressing his doubts head-on, I'd turned them into a non-issue. At least, that was the plan. Using me? He said, and I could hear the indignation in his voice. Vivian, don't be ridiculous. You know I'd do anything for you. How much do you need? Hook, line, and sinker. I don't want to put you in a difficult position, I said, even as my mind calculated how much I could safely squeeze out of him without raising suspicion. I just need enough to get back on my feet. Maybe 2,000? I promise I'll pay you back. 2,000, he repeated, as if the amount were pocket change. And to him, it probably was. Of course. I'll transfer it to you today. Relief flooded my voice as I thanked him, my tone dripping with gratitude. Thomas, I don't know what I'd do without you. You're amazing. He ate it up, of course, basking in the glow of my praise. By the time I hung up, he was practically purring, convinced he'd just saved the day. But I wasn't finished with him yet. Later that evening, I met Thomas at his office. He liked to work late, claiming it gave him a head start on the competition, but I knew the truth. His wife barely noticed when he was gone, and the office was where he felt most in control. It was also the perfect place for me to plant the next seed in my little con. I walked in wearing a dress that was just modest enough to be appropriate, but tight enough to remind him why he'd fallen for me in the first place. His eyes lit up when he saw me, and I smiled, letting the door close behind me. Vivian, he said, standing as I approached his desk. You didn't have to come all this way. I wanted to thank you, I said, setting down a bottle of his favorite scotch, another borrowed luxury. You've done so much for me, Thomas. I don't know how to repay you. He waved a hand dismissively, but his eyes lingered on me. There's no need to repay me, Vivian. I told you, I'm happy to help. I took a step closer, letting my fingers brush against his arm. I mean it, I said softly. You've been incredible. But I hate feeling like I'm taking advantage of you. You're not, he said quickly, his voice firm. If anything, I should be doing more. You deserve so much better than the life you've been dealt. I tilted my head, letting my hair fall over one shoulder. Do you really mean that? Of course I do, he said, his tone earnest. You're special, Vivian. I've never met anyone like you. The words were almost too easy, but I smiled anyway, leaning in just enough to make his breath catch. You're sweet, Thomas. But I don't just want to take from you. I want to help you too. He frowned, confused. Help me? With what? With your wife, I said, letting the words hang in the air for a moment before continuing. You've told me how she treats you, how she makes you feel like you're never enough. You don't deserve that. And I can help. How? He asked, his voice low, his eyes searching mine. I leaned closer, my lips brushing against his ear as I whispered my plan. It was simple, really. Just a few transfers from their joint account into a private one he could use for emergencies. Money she wouldn't notice was missing until it was too late. At first, he hesitated, his loyalty warring with his desire for freedom. But in the end, Thomas was like all the others, weak, desperate, and willing to believe anything if it meant feeling in control. By the time I left his office, the plan was in motion. Thomas would funnel the money into an account I controlled, all while thinking it was his idea. And as I walked out into the cool night air, I felt the familiar rush of victory. But deep down, I knew this was only the beginning. The more I took, the more dangerous the game became. And if I wasn't careful, I'd end up caught in my own web. Chapter 4, Cracks in the Facade. There's a moment just before everything falls apart, when you can feel the shift. The air gets heavier, conversations become more strained, and the faces of the people you manipulate start to change. It's subtle at first, a fleeting glance, a pause too long before they respond, a question asked too many times. But for someone like me, someone who's spent her life reading people, it's unmistakable. The cracks in the facade were beginning to show, and I knew I had to act fast before the pieces came crashing down. Jason called me the next morning, his voice sharp and impatient. He wasn't angry, not yet, but there was a tension in his tone that set me on edge. "Viv, we need to meet," he said, skipping any pleasantries. "There's something I've been thinking about, and I need to talk to you in person." I forced a smile into my voice, even though my stomach churned. "Of course, Jason. When are you free?" "Tonight. 8 o'clock. I'll pick you up." Jason wasn't the type to ask, he demanded. And tonight, his demands felt heavier than usual, like he was testing me. I agreed, of course, but as I hung up the phone, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. Then there was Thomas. He'd called me twice already, leaving voicemails laced with a mix of affection and concern. He wanted to know if I was okay, if I'd managed to sort out my finances, if there was anything else he could do to help. His generosity would have been endearing if it wasn't so damn predictable. But his persistence was starting to wear thin. I couldn't keep dodging his questions forever. And Eric, sweet, gullible Eric, had sent me a string of texts that morning, asking if I wanted to come over for dinner. "I'll cook for you," he'd written, followed by a smiley face. "Something special." The thought of sitting across from him, pretending to care about his homemade pasta while he stared at me with those wide, adoring eyes, made my skin crawl. But I needed Eric. Not for his love or his cooking, but for his skills. The data he'd pulled from his wife's business accounts had already proven useful, and I wasn't done with him yet. By the time Jason pulled up to my apartment that night, I'd already rehearsed half a dozen explanations, each tailored to fit whatever accusation he might throw my way. He drove a black truck, the kind that roared down the street like it was announcing its arrival, and when I climbed into the passenger seat, I could feel the tension radiating off him. "Hey," I said softly, leaning over to kiss his cheek. "You okay?" He grunted, his hands gripping the steering wheel so tightly his knuckles turned white. "We'll talk when we get there." "Get where?" I asked, trying to keep my tone light, casual. "You'll see." Jason wasn't in the mood for small talk, and as he drove, the silence between us grew heavy. I watched him out of the corner of my eye, studying the set of his jaw, the way his eyes flicked toward me every so often like he was waiting for me to crack. But I didn't crack. I never did. When we finally pulled up to a secluded spot near the edge of town, my heart started to race. The area was deserted, just an empty parking lot surrounded by trees, and the only light came from the truck's headlights. Jason killed the engine and turned to face me, his expression unreadable. "Out," he said, nodding toward the passenger door. I hesitated for a fraction of a second before obeying. As I stepped out into the cool night air, the sound of crickets filled the silence, a faint but eerie backdrop to the tension between us. Jason rounded the truck and stopped a few feet away, his hands stuffed into the pockets of his jacket. "Viv," he started, his voice low. "I need you to be straight with me. No lies, no bullshit." "Of course," I said, keeping my voice steady even as my pulse quickened. "What's going on?" He stared at me for a long moment, his eyes searching mine like he was trying to find something hidden beneath the surface. "The tools. The money. All the shit you've been asking about. Why, Viv? What are you really up to?" I opened my mouth to respond, but he cut me off. "And don't give me that crap about worrying about me," he snapped. "I've been thinking about it, and it doesn't add up. None of it does." The anger in his voice was unmistakable now, and I knew I had to tread carefully. Jason was like a ticking time bomb, and one wrong move could set him off. "I don't know what you mean," I said, letting my voice tremble just enough to sound convincing. "Jason, I've only ever wanted to help you. If I overstepped, I'm sorry, but..." "Bullshit," he shouted, taking a step closer. "You're hiding something, Viv. I can feel it. And I'm done letting you play me." I flinched, not because I was afraid, but because I needed him to believe I was. Jason thrived on power, on the feeling of control, and if I wanted to defuse the situation, I had to let him think he had the upper hand. "Jason, please," I said, my voice breaking. "I'm not playing you. I swear. I care about you." "Then prove it," he said, his voice dropping to a dangerous whisper. "Tell me the truth. Right now. The truth." He wanted the truth. But Jason didn't know what he was asking for. If I told him the truth, if I let him see the depths of my deception, it would destroy him. And me. So instead, I did what I did best. "I lied. I've been trying to protect you," I said, tears streaming down my face. "Your boss, the guys at work, they've been talking about you, Jason. saying things. I didn't want to tell you because I knew it would hurt you, but they're planning to get rid of you. They think you're stealing from the company, and they're looking for proof. His eyes narrowed, his jaw clenching as he processed my words. What? They've been watching you, I continued, my voice trembling. That's why I was asking questions about the tools. I was trying to figure out who's behind it, so I could warn you. I didn't want you to get blindsided. Jason stared at me, his expression a mix of anger and confusion. For a moment, I thought he might see through the lie, but then his shoulders relaxed, and the tension in his face softened. Why didn't you just tell me? He asked, his voice barely above a whisper. I didn't want to make things worse, I said, stepping closer and placing a hand on his arm. I was scared, Jason. For you. For us. He sighed, running a hand through his hair. Jesus, Viv. I don't know what to say. You don't have to say anything, I said, my voice soothing. Just trust me. I'll take care of it. Jason nodded, the fire in his eyes dimming as he pulled me into a rough embrace. I'm sorry, he muttered. I thought. It's okay, I said, cutting him off. I understand, but as I held him, my mind raced. Jason might have bought my lie for now, but his doubts weren't gone. And if I didn't find a way to eliminate those doubts, they would destroy everything I'd worked for. That night, as I lay in bed, I couldn't sleep. Jason wasn't my only problem. Thomas was growing impatient, and Eric was too naive to notice the storm brewing around him. The cracks in my facade were widening, and for the first time, I wasn't sure if I could patch them up. But I wasn't about to give up. Not now. Not ever. I'd built my life on manipulation, betrayal, and lies. And if the walls came crashing down, I'd make damn sure they took everyone else with them. Chapter 5, Betrayal Unveiled. There's a strange kind of calm that comes right before a storm. It's deceptive, almost comforting, like the universe is giving you one last chance to breathe before it rips everything apart. That's how it felt in the days leading up to the night everything fell apart. I could feel the tension thickening around me, like a noose tightening with every lie, every manipulation, every stolen dollar. Jason had calmed down after our last confrontation, but I knew better than to think I'd put his suspicions to rest. He wasn't the kind of man who let things go. He was a dog with a bone, and no amount of soothing words or calculated tears would change that. The only reason he hadn't snapped yet was because he wanted to believe me. He wanted to believe I was worth his loyalty. But deep down, I knew his faith in me was hanging by a thread. Thomas, on the other hand, was growing more impatient. His calls were becoming more frequent, his tone more insistent. He wanted to see me, to talk to me, to remind himself why he'd risked so much for me. But every time I looked at my phone and saw his name flash across the screen, I felt a flicker of dread. Thomas wasn't like Jason or Eric. He was smart, calculating, and far less forgiving. If he started piecing things together, there would be no convincing him otherwise. And then there was Eric. Sweet, gullible Eric, who still looked at me like I was the answer to every prayer he'd ever whispered. He had no idea the data he'd stolen from me was already in use. No clue that I'd taken his naive love for me and turned it into a weapon. But Eric's innocence was both a blessing and a curse. It made him easy to manipulate, but it also made him dangerous in a way the others weren't. If he ever found out the truth, I wasn't sure he'd have the strength to let it go. I was balancing on a knife's edge, and I could feel it. The weight of my lies, my schemes, my betrayals, it was all pressing down on me, threatening to crush me under its weight. But I couldn't stop. I didn't know how. The storm hit on a Friday night. I remember because it was raining, hard, cold sheets of rain that pounded against the windows of my apartment like an omen. I was alone, sipping wine and trying to ignore the gnawing anxiety in my chest when my phone buzzed. It was a text from Jason. I know everything. My stomach dropped. My hands trembled as I stared at the words, my mind racing. Everything? What did he mean? What did he know? And more importantly, who had told him? Before I could respond, another message came through. Meet me at the warehouse. Now. The warehouse. Of course, he'd picked the one place that screamed danger. It was an old, abandoned building on the outskirts of town, a place he'd taken me once to show me the tools and materials he'd stolen for me. I'd never liked it. It was too dark, too quiet, too full of shadows. But Jason had always loved it. To him, it was a symbol of his rebellion, his power. And now it was the stage he'd chosen for whatever confrontation was about to unfold. I grabbed my coat and left without responding, my heart pounding with every step. I didn't know what I was walking into, but I knew it wasn't good. Jason wasn't the kind of man who sent vague, threatening messages unless he meant them. And tonight, his message had been as clear as the storm raging outside. When I arrived at the warehouse, the first thing I noticed was Jason's truck parked out front. The headlights were off, but the engine was still running, a low rumble that sent a shiver down my spine. I hesitated for a moment, then stepped inside, my heels clicking against the concrete floor. The warehouse was dark, the only light coming from a single bulb hanging in the center of the room. Jason stood beneath it, his arms crossed and his face shadowed. But he wasn't alone. Thomas was there, too, standing off to the side with his hands shoved into the pockets of his coat. He looked out of place, his expensive suit and polished shoes clashing with the grime and grit of the warehouse. But his expression was anything but polished. His jaw was tight, his eyes cold, and the set of his shoulders told me he was ready for a fight. And then there was Eric. Sweet, naive Eric, who looked like he'd been dragged there against his will. His face was pale, his eyes wide with confusion and fear, and his hands were clenched into fists at his sides. He wasn't looking at Jason or Thomas. He was looking at me. "Vivian," Jason said, his voice cutting through the silence like a knife. "Glad you could make it." I forced a smile, even as my stomach twisted. "Jason, what's going on? Why are we all here?" "Don't play dumb," he snapped, taking a step toward me. "You know exactly why we're here." I opened my mouth to respond, but Thomas cut me off. "You lied to me," he said, his voice low and dangerous. "You used me. I trusted you, and you used me. Thomas, I..." "Shut up," Jason growled, his eyes blazing. "We all know what you've been doing, Viv. The lies, the manipulation, the stealing. Did you really think you could play all of us and get away with it?" "I don't know what you're talking about," I said, my voice shaking. "Jason, please, you have to believe me." "Believe you?" he shouted, his voice echoing off the walls. "You think I believe a damn word that comes out of your mouth? You've been lying to me since the day we met." I turned to Eric, desperate for an ally. "Eric, you know me. You know I wouldn't do this." But Eric just shook his head, his eyes filled with something I couldn't quite place. "Anger? Sadness? Betrayal? Maybe all three. I don't know you at all," he said quietly. "Not anymore." The weight of his words hit me like a punch to the gut. And for the first time, I felt the full weight of what I'd done. I'd built my life on lies, on manipulation, on betrayal. And now it was all crashing down around me. Jason took another step forward, his hands clenched into fists. "You're going to pay for this, Viv. One way or another." I looked at the three of them, my mind racing. They were united now, their anger and betrayal aimed squarely at me. And in that moment, I realized I was out of moves. But I wasn't out of fight. Chapter 6, A Deadly Confrontation. When you've lived your life weaving webs of lies, you start to see everyone else as part of the game. Pawns to be played, manipulated, and discarded when their usefulness runs out. But standing there in that dark, damp warehouse, with Jason's rage barely contained, Thomas's cold, calculating glare, and Eric's heartbroken disbelief, I realized something terrifying. The pawns were no longer mine to control. The game had shifted, and I was the one being played. The air was thick with tension, the kind that clings to your skin and makes it hard to breathe. Jason stood at the center of it all, his fists clenched so tightly I thought his knuckles might crack. His eyes burned with the kind of fury that only betrayal can spark, and I knew that, in his mind, this was already a trial, and I was guilty. "You think we're stupid, don't you?" Jason said, his voice low and venomous. "You thought you could play us, string us along, and we'd never figure it out." "Jason, listen to me," I started, my voice steady despite the fear clawing at my chest. "Whatever you think I've done, it's not what it looks like. I can explain." "Explain?" He barked a laugh, the sound harsh and bitter. "Go ahead, Viv. Explain how you convinced me to steal from my job. Explain how you got Thomas to funnel money out of his wife's account. Explain how you used Eric's love for you to hack into his own wife's business. Go ahead. I'd love to hear it." I opened my mouth, searching for the right words, but before I could speak, Thomas cut in. "She's not going to explain anything," he said, his voice cold and controlled, a sharp contrast to Jason's barely restrained rage. "Because she's a liar. It's what she does. Isn't that right, Vivian?" I turned to Thomas, forcing my face into an expression of hurt and disbelief. "Thomas, you know me. You know I care about you. I would never..." "Stop," he snapped, his voice like a whip. "Don't you dare stand there and lie to my face. I've seen the transfers. I've traced the money. You think you're so clever, don't you? But you made one mistake." "What mistake?" I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. "You underestimated me," he said, stepping closer. His eyes bored into mine, cold and unrelenting. "You thought I was just another pawn. But I'm not. And neither is he. He nodded toward Jason, who took another step forward, his hands twitching like he was itching to strike. I glanced at Eric, hoping for some shred of sympathy, some sign that he still believed in me, but his face was a mask of devastation. "Eric," I said, my voice trembling. "You know me. You know I wouldn't do this. Please tell them." But Eric just shook his head, his voice breaking as he spoke. "I loved you, Vivian. I thought you loved me too. But this isn't love. You've been using me. All of us." His words hit harder than I expected, like a punch to the gut. Eric was the one I thought would never turn on me, the one who would always see me as the woman I pretended to be. But now, even he was slipping through my fingers. "Enough of this," Jason growled, his voice rising. "We didn't come here to listen to her lies. Then what did you come here for?" I asked, my voice sharper than I intended. "To yell at me? To scare me? What's the plan, Jason? Because if you think threatening me is going to..." I didn't see it coming. One second, I was staring him down, my defiance burning bright despite the fear. And the next, his hand was around my throat, slamming me back against the cold metal wall. My head hit the surface with a sickening thud, and stars exploded in my vision. "Don't you dare talk to me like that," he snarled, his face inches from mine. "You don't get to act like the victim here." "Jason, stop." Eric's voice cut through the haze of pain, but Jason didn't loosen his grip. His hand tightened, cutting off my air, and for a moment, I thought he might actually kill me right there. But then Thomas stepped in, pulling Jason back with a firm hand on his shoulder. "Not yet," he said, his voice calm but commanding. "We're not done with her." Jason released me reluctantly, and I crumpled to the floor, gasping for air. My vision swam as I struggled to get my bearings, but the sharp edge of fear kept me grounded. These weren't just angry men, they were men with nothing left to lose. And that made them dangerous. "Get up," Thomas said, his voice cold. I pushed myself to my feet, my body screaming in protest. My head throbbed where it had hit the wall, and my throat burned from Jason's grip, but I forced myself to stand tall. I couldn't show weakness. "Not now. What do you want?" I asked, my voice hoarse. "You've already made up your minds about me. So why am I here?" Thomas stepped closer, his gaze piercing. "You're here because we want answers. We want to know why you did it." "Because she's a selfish bitch," Jason spat, pacing like a caged animal. "That's why." "No," Thomas said, his eyes never leaving mine. "It's more than that. Isn't it, Vivian? This wasn't just about money. It was about power. Control. You wanted to see how far you could push us, how much you could take before we snapped." He was right, of course. But I wasn't about to admit that. "You're wrong," I said, my voice steady despite the pounding of my heart. "I did what I had to do to survive. You think my life has been easy? You think I had the luxury of playing by the rules? I did what I had to do because no one else would help me." "Spare us the sob story," Jason growled. "We've all had hard lives. Doesn't mean we go around screwing people over." I turned to him, my eyes flashing. "Don't act like you're innocent, Jason. You stole from your job. You lied to your wife. You did all of it willingly. Don't blame me for your choices. That hit a nerve." Jason lunged for me again, but Thomas held him back. "Enough," Thomas said, his voice sharp. "We're not here to fight. We're here to decide what to do with her." "What to do with me?" I repeated, my stomach twisting. "What does that mean?" "It means you've run out of chances," Thomas said, his voice cold and final. "And now you're going to pay for what you've done." The weight of his words hit me like a ton of bricks. I'd always known this day might come, but I'd convinced myself I'd be ready for it. I wasn't. "Please," I said, my voice trembling. "You don't have to do this. We can work something out. I'll pay you back." "Save it," Jason snapped. "We're done listening to your lies." The three of them closed in, their anger and betrayal palpable. I could feel the walls closing in, my options dwindling with every passing second. And for the first time in my life, I didn't have a plan. But I wasn't going down without a fight. Chapter 7. The Aftermath. When the storm finally broke, I was left standing in the wreckage of my own creation. Blood pounding in my ears, my head spinning from the violence that had erupted in the warehouse, I struggled to comprehend how everything had spiraled so completely out of control. My carefully constructed web of manipulation had unraveled, leaving behind only chaos. Jason was gone, storming out into the rain after being pulled off me for the second time. The look in his eyes before he left, raw, unfiltered hatred, told me everything I needed to know. Whatever feelings he'd had for me, whatever loyalty he'd clung to was gone. Now there was only rage. Thomas had stayed behind, his expression cold and calculating as he leaned against one of the metal support beams, watching me with the detachment of a predator deciding whether or not to pounce. He'd always been the smartest of the three, the one I'd underestimated the most. And now, his patience was wearing thin. Eric, sweet, naive Eric, had been the first to crumble. He'd collapsed into a chair, his face pale, his hands shaking as he muttered to himself. He hadn't said a word since Jason left, his mind clearly spinning as he tried to process the reality of who I was. I had broken him, and for the first time, I felt a pang of something dangerously close to guilt. But guilt wouldn't save me. Not now. Thomas finally broke the silence, his voice low and steady. Do you even feel bad? For any of this? I didn't answer right away. I was too busy calculating, trying to figure out what my next move should be. But the silence only seemed to infuriate him. Answer me, Vivian, he snapped. Do you feel anything for the damage you've caused? I looked up at him, my face carefully blank. What do you want me to say, Thomas? That I'm sorry? That I regret everything I've done? Would that make you feel better? His jaw tightened, his fists clenching at his sides. It's not about making me feel better. It's about owning up to what you've done. What I've done. I let out a bitter laugh, shaking my head. Don't act like you're innocent in all of this. You made your choices, just like Jason and Eric. No one forced you to do anything. You manipulated us, Thomas said, his voice rising. You lied to us, used us. Because you let me. I snapped, cutting him off. You wanted to believe the lies, Thomas. You wanted to feel like the hero, like the savior. Don't blame me for giving you what you wanted. He stepped closer, his eyes narrowing. You're unbelievable. Maybe, I said, my voice softer now, almost resigned. But that doesn't change anything, does it? He didn't respond, his gaze piercing as he studied me. I could see the wheels turning in his head, the calculations he was making. Thomas wasn't like Jason, driven purely by emotion, or Eric, paralyzed by heartbreak. He was strategic, methodical. And that made him the most dangerous of them all. After what felt like an eternity, Thomas finally spoke again. You're going to fix this. I raised an eyebrow. Fix it? And how do you suggest I do that? You're going to give back everything you took, he said, his voice firm. Every cent. Every stolen piece of information. You're going to undo the damage you've done, or... Or what? I challenged, my eyes locking with his. What are you going to do, Thomas? Call the cops? Tell them you helped me steal from your own wife? Good luck with that. His jaw tightened, but he didn't back down. Don't test me, Vivian. You don't want to see what I'm capable of. The tension between us was suffocating, but I refused to look away. This was a battle of wills now, and I couldn't afford to show weakness. Not to him. Not to anyone. Thomas, Eric's voice broke through the standoff, shaky and uncertain. What are we doing? This isn't us. Thomas turned to him, his expression softening just enough to show the cracks in his armor. Eric, you don't understand. She's dangerous. If we let her walk away from this, she'll ruin someone else's life. Maybe worse. I didn't ruin your lives, I said, my voice sharp. I gave you what you wanted. You just didn't like the price. Shut up, Thomas snapped, his eyes flashing with anger. You don't get to justify this. Why not? I shot back. You're just as guilty as I am, Thomas. All of you are. You think I forced you to do anything? You made your choices. You're just angry because you didn't get what you thought you deserved. Thomas moved so fast I barely had time to react. One moment he was standing a few feet away, and the next his hand was around my wrist, pulling me closer. His grip was iron, his face inches from mine as he spoke through gritted teeth. You're going to pay for this, Vivian, he said, his voice low and menacing. One way or another. Let her go. Eric's voice rang out, and for the first time, there was a spark of something stronger than fear in his eyes. He stood, his hands clenched into fists, his gaze locked on Thomas. This isn't right. Thomas turned to him, his grip on my wrist tightening. Stay out of this, Eric. No, Eric said, his voice trembling but firm. She's not worth it, Thomas. Let her go. For a moment, I thought Thomas might actually listen. His grip loosened just slightly, and his gaze shifted to Eric, a flicker of uncertainty crossing his face. But then he shook his head, his resolve hardening once more. She's not walking away from this, he said, his voice cold. Not after everything she's done. I took advantage of his momentary distraction, twisting my wrist free from his grasp and stepping back. My heart was pounding, my mind racing as I tried to figure out my next move. Thomas was too focused, too determined. Jason was gone, but he wouldn't stay gone for long. And Eric, poor, sweet Eric, was too broken to be of any real help. I needed to get out of there. Now. But as I turned toward the door, Thomas grabbed my arm again, yanking me back with a force that nearly knocked me off my feet. "You're not going anywhere," he growled. "Thomas, stop!" Eric shouted, stepping forward. "This isn't the way." "She deserves this," Thomas said, his voice shaking with anger. "After everything she's done, she deserves to pay." "And what about you?" I shot back, my voice sharp. "What do you deserve, Thomas? For cheating on your wife? For stealing from her? For lying to yourself about who you really are?" His hand tightened around my arm, his eyes blazing. "Don't you dare!" "Enough!" Eric's voice cut through the chaos, louder and more forceful than I'd ever heard it. He stepped between us, his hands raised in a gesture of peace. "This has to stop. All of it. We can't undo what's been done, but this isn't the answer." Thomas hesitated, his grip on my arm loosening just enough for me to pull free. I stumbled back, my heart racing, my mind spinning. For a moment, none of us moved, the weight of the confrontation hanging heavy in the air. And then, without another word, I turned and ran. The sound of my footsteps echoed in the empty warehouse, each one a reminder of how close I'd come to losing everything. Again. But I wasn't safe yet. Not by a long shot. Chapter 8, The Trap. I ran blindly into the storm, the cold rain slicing against my skin like needles. My heels skidded across the wet pavement as I stumbled toward my car, my breaths coming in short, panicked gasps. I could barely see through the darkness and the downpour, but I didn't stop. I couldn't stop. Not when I knew they were behind me, Thomas, Eric, maybe even Jason, if he'd doubled back. The three of them weren't going to let me walk away, not this time. The fear clawed at my chest, but underneath it, there was something else, anger. How dare they turn on me like this? I'd given them purpose, excitement, a reason to feel alive. They'd needed me as much as I'd needed them, and now they wanted to make me their scapegoat? No, I wasn't going to let them win. I wasn't going to let them destroy me. I reached my car and fumbled with the keys, my hands shaking so badly it took three tries to unlock the door. As I slid into the driver's seat, I glanced back toward the warehouse, half expecting to see them charging after me. But the parking lot was empty, save for the shadows cast by the flickering streetlights. For a moment, I let myself believe I'd escaped. But deep down, I knew better. The drive back to my apartment was a blur. The rain hammered against the windshield, the wipers barely keeping up as I gripped the steering wheel with white-knuckled desperation. My mind raced with a thousand thoughts, each one more frantic than the last. What was I going to do? Where could I go? How could I salvage what was left of my life? By the time I pulled into the lot outside my building, my clothes were soaked, my makeup smeared, and my mind teetering on the edge of panic. I didn't bother with an umbrella as I dashed inside, the cold rain soaking me to the bone. The elevator ride to my floor felt like an eternity, and when the doors finally opened, I hurried down the hallway, my heels clicking against the tile. I unlocked the door to my apartment and stepped inside, locking it behind me with trembling hands. The familiar scent of vanilla candles greeted me, but it felt wrong now, like a cruel mockery of the life I'd built. Everything felt wrong. I was supposed to be in control, the one pulling the strings. But now the strings had wrapped around my neck, and I was suffocating. I threw my wet coat over the back of a chair and poured myself a glass of wine, my hands shaking so badly that half of it sloshed onto the counter. I didn't care. I needed something to calm my nerves, something to drown out the voices in my head telling me I was out of options. I downed the wine in one gulp and poured another, barely noticing the burn as it slid down my throat. As I set the glass down, my phone buzzed on the counter. The sound made me jump, and for a moment, I just stared at it, my heart pounding. I already knew who it was. There were only three people who would be calling me now, and none of them had good intentions. I picked up the phone with a shaky hand and glanced at the screen. It was Jason. Of course it was Jason. He was the only one volatile enough to call instead of texting, the only one who wouldn't care about subtlety. My thumb hovered over the decline button, but something stopped me. Maybe it was curiosity. Maybe it was fear. Or maybe it was the faint hope that I could still salvage something from this mess. I answered. "What do you want, Jason?" I said, my voice sharper than I intended. "You," he said, his voice low and menacing. "I want you to pay for what you've done." I rolled my eyes, even though he couldn't see me. "Oh, spare me the theatrics. If you wanted revenge, you should have taken your shot at the warehouse." "Don't worry," he said, a hint of a smirk in his tone. "I'll get my chance. You're not as untouchable as you think, Vivian." "Is that a threat?" I asked, my voice cold. "It's a promise," he replied. "You think you're so smart, don't you? Playing all of us like puppets. But the game's over now and you've lost. I clenched my jaw, my fingers tightening around the phone. You're pathetic, Jason. All of you are. You needed me. You needed someone to tell you what to do, to make you feel alive. And now you're angry because you couldn't handle the truth. The truth, he repeated, his voice rising. The truth is you're nothing but a liar and a thief. And you're going to pay for every single thing you've done. The line went dead before I could respond, leaving me staring at the phone with a mix of frustration and fear. Jason wasn't bluffing. I could hear it in his voice, the raw hatred that burned with the intensity of a man who had nothing left to lose. And men with nothing left to lose were the most dangerous of all. I spent the next few hours pacing the apartment, my mind racing as I tried to figure out my next move. I couldn't stay here, not with Jason, Thomas, and Eric out there, plotting their revenge. But where could I go? Who could I turn to? I had burned every bridge, severed every tie, left myself completely and utterly alone. By the time the sun started to rise, I was no closer to a solution. My body ached from the tension, my mind exhausted from the endless spiral of fear and anger. I needed a plan, but every option felt like a dead end. I was trapped, caught in a web of my own making, and the walls were closing in. And then I saw it, a note taped to the inside of my front door. The sight of it sent a jolt of fear through me, and I approached it cautiously, my heart pounding in my chest. The handwriting was familiar, Jason's, and the message was short but chilling. We're not done. See you soon. I stared at the note, my mind racing. How had he gotten inside? How long had he been here? The thought of him standing in my apartment while I slept sent a shiver down my spine. He was toying with me now, playing his own game. And for the first time, I realized I might not survive it. I crumpled the note in my fist and threw it across the room, my fear boiling over into anger. I wasn't going to let Jason win. I wasn't going to let any of them win. They wanted a fight? Fine. I'd give them one. But this time I wasn't playing defense. Chapter 9, The Final Reckoning. By the time night fell, I had made my decision. I wasn't going to run. I wasn't going to cower in fear, waiting for Jason, Thomas, or Eric to make their move. No, that wasn't me. I'd spent my entire life taking control, pulling the strings, and making people dance to my tune. If they thought they could turn the tables on me, they were sorely mistaken. But as much as I tried to tell myself I was still in control, the truth gnawed at the edges of my mind. The game had changed. And this time, the stakes weren't just money or trust, they were life and death. I could feel it in the way Jason had spoken to me, in the way Thomas had looked at me, in the way Eric's heartbreak had turned to quiet fury. They wanted vengeance, and they were willing to do whatever it took to get it. So I prepared. If they wanted a confrontation, I'd make sure it happened on my terms. I spent hours in my apartment that day, pacing the floors and meticulously planning my next move. My body was exhausted, but my mind raced with adrenaline-fueled clarity. I made phone calls to old contacts, people I hadn't spoken to in years, people who owed me favors. I didn't tell them much, just enough to get what I needed: cash, a clean burner phone, and a place to disappear if things went sideways. Next, I packed a bag. Not the kind of bag you take on vacation, but the kind you take when you don't know if you're coming back. Inside, I put the essentials: a change of clothes, my passport, cash, and a small handgun I'd bought years ago for reasons I'd never had to explain. It was cold, heavy, and unfamiliar in my hands, but as I stared at it, I realized it was the only real insurance I had left. When I was done, I sat at the edge of my bed, staring at the bag, the gun, and the life I'd built around me. Everything felt fragile, like it could shatter at any moment. And maybe it already had. But I wasn't going to give up without a fight. The trap was set. I sent a single text to Jason from the burner phone, knowing it would set everything in motion. Meet me at the warehouse. Midnight. Just you. I didn't expect him to come alone. Jason wasn't stupid, and he wasn't going to trust me any more than I trusted him. But that didn't matter. The warehouse was isolated, quiet, the perfect place to end this once and for all. And if Jason brought Thomas or Eric with him, well, I'd deal with them too. The rain had stopped by the time I arrived at the warehouse, but the air was still damp and heavy. The building loomed in the darkness, its broken windows and rusted doors casting eerie shadows in the moonlight. I parked my car a block away and approached on foot, my senses on high alert. Every sound, every movement, sent a jolt of adrenaline through me, but I forced myself to stay calm. Inside, the warehouse was as dark and foreboding as I remembered. The single light bulb in the center of the room still flickered, casting long, shifting shadows across the concrete floor. I stood beneath it, my bag slung over one shoulder, my hand resting on the gun tucked into my waistband. My heart pounded in my chest, but my face was calm. If this was going to be my final act, I'd make damn sure I went out on my own terms. I didn't have to wait long. The sound of footsteps echoed through the building, followed by the unmistakable creak of the warehouse door. I turned, my eyes narrowing as Jason stepped into the light. He wasn't alone. Thomas and Eric followed close behind, their expressions as grim and determined as his. The three of them looked like a jury delivering a verdict, and I was the condemned. "Vivian," Jason said, his voice dripping with venom. "You've got some nerve." I smiled, though it didn't reach my eyes. Funny, I was about to say the same thing. Thomas stepped forward, his gaze cold and calculating. "Enough of the games, Vivian. You brought us here for a reason. So what is it? Another lie? Another con?" "No," I said, my voice steady. "No more lies. No more games. I brought you here because I'm tired of running. If you want to settle this, let's settle it. Right here. Right now." Jason laughed, a harsh, humorless sound. "Settle it? You think this is something we can just settle? After everything you've done. What do you want, Jason?" I shot back, my tone sharp. "Revenge? Justice? Closure? Whatever it is, let's get it over with." Eric flinched at my words, his hands trembling at his sides. He still looked at me with that same mixture of anger and heartbreak, like he was trying to reconcile the woman he'd loved with the one standing before him now. But his silence told me he wasn't ready to forgive me. Not yet. Maybe not ever. Thomas, however, was far less conflicted. He reached into his coat and pulled out a knife, its blade gleaming in the dim light. "You've taken everything from us, Vivian," he said, his voice cold. "Now it's time for us to take something from you." My hand moved instinctively to the gun at my waistband, but I didn't draw it. Not yet. I needed to keep control, to stay one step ahead. "You think killing me will fix anything?" I asked, my voice calm despite the fear coiling in my chest. "It won't bring back the money. It won't undo the lies. And it sure as hell won't make you feel better." Jason took a step closer, his eyes blazing. "Maybe not. But it'll make sure you never hurt anyone else." The tension in the room was palpable, the air thick with the promise of violence. My mind raced, calculating my next move. I could feel the weight of the gun against my hip, the cold steel a reminder that I wasn't defenseless. But if I drew it now, there would be no turning back. The moment I pulled that trigger, everything would change. And then Eric spoke. "This isn't right," he said, his voice trembling. "We're not like her. We're not killers." Thomas turned to him, his expression hard. "She deserves this, Eric. You know she does." "No," Eric said, shaking his head. "I can't. I won't." For a moment, I saw my chance. The divide between them was widening, and I could use it. But before I could speak, Jason lunged. It happened in an instant. He moved toward me with the kind of raw, unrestrained fury that only betrayal can fuel, and I barely had time to react. My hand went to the gun, pulling it free and leveling it at him, just as he reached me. "Don't," I warned, my voice sharp. But Jason didn't stop. He was too far gone, too consumed by his need for vengeance. And in that moment, I realized there was only one way this could end. The sound of the gunshot echoed through the warehouse, deafening in the silence. Jason froze, his eyes widening in shock as he staggered back, clutching his chest. Blood bloomed beneath his hands, staining his shirt as he fell to the ground. Thomas and Eric stared at me, their faces a mix of shock and horror. The gun trembled in my hand, but I didn't lower it. "I couldn't. Not yet. Stay back," I warned, my voice shaking. "I don't want to hurt anyone else. But I will if I have to." Thomas stepped forward, his hands raised. "Vivian, don't do this. You've already..." "Stop," I shouted, cutting him off. "Just stop." For a moment, no one moved. The tension was suffocating, the silence broken only by Jason's ragged breaths. And then slowly I lowered the gun. "This is over," I said, my voice hollow. "It's done." But as I turned to leave, I knew the truth. It was far from over. And it would never truly be done.